Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 5, The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, text number 18, I believe, is on the board. Yeah, 18. Tato Tata Arabya Nandasya Raja Sarva Samridainam Man Harir Niva Shatma Gunai Ramakrishnam Abun Nripa. Tata Arabya. Beginning from that time. Nandasya, Amaraj Nanda, Raja, Rajabhumi, the land for protecting and breeding cows, Sarva Samridiman, became opulent with all kinds of riches, Hare Nivasa, of the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atmagunai, by the transcendental qualities. Rama Akridam, the place of pastimes of the Goddess of Fortune. Abhut, became. Ripa, O King Maharaj Prakshet. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Yes, that's right. Good. Omar Prakshit, the home of Nanda Maharaj, is eternally the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His transcendental qualities. Is therefore always naturally endowed with the opulence of all wealth. Yet beginning from Lord Krishna's appearance there, it became the place for the pastimes of the Goddess of Fortune. Purport, as stated in the Brahma Samhita 529, Lakshmi Sahasra Shatasam Brahma Sevyamanam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The abode of Krishna is always served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Wherever Krishna goes, the goddess of fortune naturally resides with him. The chief of the goddesses of fortune, Srimati Radharani. Therefore, Krishna's appearance in the land of Braja indicated that the chief goddess of fortune, Radharani, would also appear there very soon. Nanda Maharaj's abode was already opulent, and since Krishna had appeared, it would be opulent in all respects. O Maharaj Prakshet, the home of Nanda Maharaj, is eternally devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His transcendental qualities. And is therefore always naturally endowed with the opulence of all wealth. Yet beginning from Lord Krishna's appearance there came the place for the pastimes of the Goddess of Fortune. There's descriptions of the abode of Krishna and where Krishna eternally herds cows. Now, in modern society, people don't consider herding cows a very noble occupation. As a matter of fact, if they hear the description in the Brahma Samhita of Krishna's abode, they think it's rather primitive, because they don't actually understand what real opulence is. People have become, of course, real opulence is Satchitananda Vigraha, bliss, knowledge, and eternity. Knowledge being the capacity to experience happiness. The more we expand our capacity to experience happiness, then the more we're advanced. And the more we actually experience real happiness, the more we're advanced. Now people have misplaced their idea of what happiness is to simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And since there's really only limited happiness and temporary, no matter how much we eat or sleep or may to defend. I doubt any one of us can say that last night I slept so well I was in ecstasy when I woke up. That my sikor, my hair, was standing on end when I woke up because I was so blissful. Or eating. It doesn't, the prasada may be very nice, but every time we take a bite and remember it, it doesn't taste, this, we don't experience the same taste just by remembering it. And if we, as we go on eating, then gradually our ability to taste decreases. As a matter of fact, probably the time when we enjoy prasadam the most is after a fast day. Then the separation makes our heart much fonder. On Janmashtami, most devotees are not looking forward to Krishna's appearance. They're looking forward to the appearance of prasadam on their plate. And when we take prasadam at night, on Janmashtami night, after fasting for the whole day, it's probably the closest we come to honoring prasadam for the whole year. We appreciate it much more than we ordinarily do. Similarly, mating defending has its limits, especially in the human form of life. Although nowadays, people are thinking they're advanced because they're able to make, they've increased their technology. And by technology, they're able to create even more illusions than we're already under. Just like they have these movies, they spend $2 billion on the movie. And in the movie, there's so many technological wonders going on. People are flying in the sky. They're creating universes, whatever. But they can't convey the feeling to anyone. The hero may be eating fantastic food, but can you taste it when you're watching the movie? It's just some light flashing through the screen, and they're willing to spend billions of dollars on that, billions of euros, just to create another illusion. As if we're not in enough illusion already, we have to create a bigger illusion, a more attractive illusion. So here we find that Krishna's abode is the goddess, is the abode of the goddess of fortune. So what does that mean? It means that everything there is blissful. But you don't need a computer to be blissful. But the you can't smell the computer. I don't think they've made a computer so far. It smells like a lotus flower. You open it up and you type into it, you know, lotus flower, and from the computer comes a lotus and a flower. It smells like a lotus flower or gardenias or whatever else. No, it's just some light flashing on a screen and we're trying to be happy watching it. But in Vrindavan, everything has is the same nature as spiritual pleasure. Shriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataruvo Druma Bhumis Chintamani Gayam Mitam Amritam. That in Vrindavan, Shriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataruvo. In Vrindavan, there's one main lover, Krishna, and he has unlimited love for all living entities. And therefore, he's all attractive, not only because he has personal beauty and all other opulences, but his most attractive feature is that he loves everyone and he's affectionate towards everyone. And naturally, he invokes everyone else's affection and love also. In Vrindavan, Krishna is not the king. He's just a regular cowherd boy. So what could be better? In order to have an intimate relationship, you can go to Vaikuntha, and there Krishna is the king, sitting on a throne with four arms, controlling everything. But how intimately can you become with the king? But just an ordinary cowherd boy. There's no prestige in being a cowherd boy. But he's the most beautiful cowherd boy. And he's the most loving cowherd boy. He loves everyone, and he makes everyone happy. That's his whole business. He doesn't do anything else except to try to make people happy. And he has unlimited powers to do so. So what would be more enjoyable? Live on this planet under the present government, where you can elect one politician or the other, so you can decide which pocket he's going to pick. One politician promises to pick one of your pockets, and the other politician promises to pick the other one. And that's called democracy. Choosing who's going to exploit you and lie to you. Or we want to choose Krishna as our leader and the abode of Vrindavan, where the flowers actually have a smell. If you take a garland, you don't have to try and figure out what if you close your eyes nowadays and you try to smell the flower, it's very difficult to know what flower it is, because they all smell the same. They don't have any smell. But in Vrindavan, all the flowers are alive, and they're all full of love for Krishna and his devotees. And that love is experienced. The water is alive, the air is alive, everything's alive with bliss and pleasure, trying to please everyone. Everyone is just simply there to please everyone else, and giving their love to everyone. So what could be a better place to go? Here, the only love is in some kind of magazine, or in the movies where everyone lives happily ever after. But if you look at them now, they don't look like they're happy. In the movie, they're all smiling, and they rode off into the sunset. But if you look at them now, they look like they're almost in the sunset. But in the spiritual world, everyone is simply eternally trying to please Krishna, and by pleasing Krishna, trying to please Krishna, one also naturally tries to please all of Krishna's devotees. And everyone there is a devotee, because Krishna is most pleased when his devotees are pleased. Therefore, Shriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpa Taruva. And there's trees there, but they give whatever you want. Whatever you desire, they fulfill your desires. They're wish-fulfilling trees. The six Goswamis, when they were here, they used to sleep under a different tree every night. But they were the Kalpa Vriksha trees. So whatever the Goswamis desired, they fulfilled all, the trees fulfilled the desires. Because they didn't desire a computer, they didn't desire a car, they just desired some little offering to please Krishna. And even a little offering to please Krishna, if it's imbued with love, then Krishna is pleased by it. Everything takes on the same quality as our consciousness. So if we offer something to someone, what we're offering them, the consciousness in which we're offering them, that object becomes imbued with that consciousness. And ultimately what's really pleasing is the consciousness in which things are offered. Therefore, there's no need for elaborate offerings in the spiritual world. They offer ghee and milk and yogurt, but these are infused with the love, not only of the devotee who's offering it, but also the cows that are producing the milk. They're producing milk simply out of love for Krishna. And therefore the milk is imbued with transcendental love, and the devotees further infuse it with transcendental love, because they're offering to Krishna. The cooking, those who cook, Mother Jasoda, Rahini, the gopis, they even put more love into the preparations. And the people, devotees who are serving it, like Rohini and her assistants, they even put more love into it. So the food there is simply imbued with love. It's made out of bliss, and it's infused with all the love of the people who are dealing with it. Therefore, it's always ever new and fresh, everything they eat. Because the devotees are always increasing their love. Therefore, the air is always increasing in its bliss. The ground is increasing. Everything is becoming more and more blissful and loving. And here, we just talk about it. Therefore, when it says Krishna appeared in the land of Vrindavan, and that Srimati Radharani is going to come, Srimati Radharani is made out of pure pleasure. loving pleasure. Her varieties of loving ecstasy for Krishna are simply different varieties of pleasure. So what would be a better place to go to? Where do we want to go to next? Do we want to come back to Ljubljana? We may in next lifetime be born in Hawaii, surf the waves? Or do we want to go to Goloka Vrindavan? That's our choice. And before we go to Goloka Vrindavan, of course, then there is the... We join Krishna in one of his pastimes in one of the planets where he's having his pastimes. And this is explaining about Gokula Vrindavan, where Krishna appears and carries on his pastimes, such as being exchanged for yoga maya and killing Putana, dancing with the gopis. In every universe, and there are unlimited universes, Krishna appears and displays his pastimes. And the devotee, after he leaves his body, if he's qualified, if he's at least on the platform of bhava, then he's eligible to go and join in one of those pastimes and become trained up so he can eventually go to the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, and spend the eternity simply increasing one's pleasure and happiness and love for Krishna and his devotees. So in order to do that, we have to practice here. But in order to practice here, we're practicing here because we have to believe that there's a goal. And there's the means to get to that goal. And it's up to us to understand, to appreciate what that goal is, and to understand what is our means to get to that goal. And as we get to that goal, just like as you approach fire, then as one approaches fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and then one is actually in the fire. So it is not we're simply waiting for the time of death, and then we'll understand. Don't put your finger in your mouth. Madhuji, don't put your finger in your mouth. Then it's not that we're waiting and waiting and then finally, you know, then we become Krishna conscious. No, it's a gradual process that even in this lifetime we have to feel that we're actually experiencing Krishna consciousness more steadily and more intensely day after day. Otherwise, Krishna consciousness will become just as boring as everything else in the material world after some time. How many times can people go and watch a movie? Even if they're completely absorbed in it, there's a limited number of times. No one will live in a movie theater just watching the same movie over and over again. But that's the material world. It's the same story over and over again. Boy meets girl. They fall in love. Boy meets other girl. Girl meets other boy. They fall in love. Or if boy meets other girl and the first girl gets very disturbed, kills the girl. Or boy meets girl, they fall in love. Girl meets other boy. Boy kills the other boy. The same thing over and over again. Just a perverted reflection of Radha and Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world. Flowers are here. The air is here. There used to be cows even here. But they're just reflections of the real world. But if we utilize this world that we're in now in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's service, because we can't use it in Krishna's pastimes right now, but there's no difference between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and Radha and Krishna's pastimes, because they're the same persons. Therefore, if we engage in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes by telling others about Krishna and following the principles by which we can experience Krishna and then telling people how nice it is to experience Krishna, then the result is that we will be in the spiritual world even in this lifetime, eventually. And then we'll know exactly what we're here for and what everyone else is here for, and we can try to encourage people, everyone else, to try, everyone we meet, anyone we can, to actually do what they're supposed to do, to actually get what they're looking for, namely real happiness that goes on forever. So here we'll hear about Krishna's land of Vrindavan, But we shouldn't just think these are just stories meant to tell little children before they go to sleep, because they're so unusual and they're so quaint and primitive that who could really take them very seriously? No, we should try to appreciate this is the real world, this is the real existence that we should actually appreciate at least. We may not be able to live on a farm right now and take care of cows. We wouldn't even know how to do it. We'd spend our time in the farmhouse on Facebook telling people what it's like to be in this farm. Still, we should try to appreciate it, and we should try to utilize whatever energies we have and utilize them in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's service according to actual instructions. We shouldn't think that these instructions are secondary either, that everyone has their duty to perform, and we should take it very seriously that this duty was not given to us by some temple commander or some devotee asked me to do something. No, this is actually Krishna asking us to do something for him. And if we do it in that spirit, and we do it to try to please Krishna, then very shortly we'll be in the spiritual world, and everything will be very blissful. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Jai Shri Panchatattva Ki Jai Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai. Yes, these are pastime stories, and to try to make them relevant to our lives, especially pastimes about living in a rural setting and about some goddess of fortune who doesn't have any money, any paper money at least, is a little bit, we have to try to relate it to our existence. What does it mean that Srimati Radharani is a goddess of fortune? Just like I mentioned, that previously, if you watch Indian movies, they're all about relationships. Did anyone ever see an Indian movie like the Sita's Wedding? Anyone see? Or Nimai of Nadia? Because now that we don't recommend to watch Indian movies because they're just, everyone has a gun and a knife and they're modern. But in the old movies, you can see like in the Ramayana or the Mahabharata, for the Western mind, it's very, very slow. It's because people are actually talking to each other. They're not trying to kill each other, which is rather unusual for a movie. And there's even a relationship between the husband and wife, which is really unusual. The husband and wife even talk to each other. And they express emotions. And morality, and all kinds of things that people just don't believe in anymore. Because previously people actually had a civilization where they cared about each other. They weren't thinking, well, what can I do to exploit this person? Nowadays the present model is, whoever you meet, try to figure out what you can get from them. But in the Veda culture, it was whoever you meet, how can I utilize my duty to serve you? There was actually a service attitude. And therefore, there was not such a big distance between Krishna consciousness and the way the general society was running. It wasn't a big leap to go from the way the society, the culture of the society, to the culture of spiritual life. They were very close to each other. And therefore, people didn't think it was very unusual to hear these stories. And they dress up, they have their plays, for instance, about Krishna. And there wasn't, you know, people with guns and knives killing each other in the play. And still they appreciate it. Because it was all about affection, love, how to live a good life, how to treat people nicely, how to take care of all living entities. And ultimately it was about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. how he was the friend of everyone. And everyone should become his friend too. Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.